Hi, this is Brendan Monk. You're currently listening to WGXC Acro, 90.7 FM, coming to you from Hudson, New York.
Hey, what's up, everyone? This is DJ Bar from Friday Night Vibe Session. If you like hip-hop, dancehall, and pop, and we have much more music, we play the second and fourth Friday of every month, 9:30 p.m. to 12 o'clock midnight. Everyone's going to be on their feet. Let's go.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the Healthcare Consortium, a rural health network dedicated to improving access to healthcare and supporting the health and well-being of the people in our rural community. Throughout 2018, the Healthcare Consortium will be celebrating 20 years of serving the residents of Columbia and Greene counties. To learn more about the Healthcare Consortium and its services, please visit www.columbiahealthnet.org or call 518-822-8820.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Hudson, Catskill, Columbia, and Greene counties in New York. We're coming to you globally at WGXC.org and locally at 90.7 FM on the radio. And this program is called The Art of the Hudson Valley, and I'm your host, Chad Weckler, and today we have a guest from Saugerties, New York. He's a curator, artist, and proprietor of Emerge Gallery in Saugerties, Robert Langdon. Hi.
Hi, Chad. How are you?
Welcome for making this way to Hudson.
It's a pleasure to be here.
I want to talk about Saugerties for a moment because Saugerties is very unpretentious. It's very friendly, much different than, I hate to say it, Hudson. It's totally different places, but like Hudson, there is a large art scene that's going on in Saugerties. And can you talk about your experiences with art in that area?
Sure. I've only been in Saugerties for close to 3 years now. May will be 3 years. It's a wonderful community. It isn't pretentious, which is nice.
Yeah.
It's a real mixture of different folks that get along really well. I'm really thrilled to be part of it. It's a really creative community. We've been finding, having a gallery there, I've been finding that there's a lot of artists coming up from New York, from Brooklyn especially, from New Jersey. And they're buying first and second homes up there and looking for a little more relaxing lifestyle. And they're finding that Saugerties and the surrounding area is the place to be. So with that comes a lot of creative people and the need for creativity to really be on the forefront in Saugerties. And that's starting to grow.
Are you on the board of the chamber?
I'm on the board of the Chamber of Commerce, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what was Shout Out Saugerties?
Shout Out Saugerties was started by Suzanne Bennett and Susanna Myers, who are both residents of Saugerties. They're both artistic people themselves. So Shout Out Saugerties started 2 years ago, and it is a celebration of arts and culture throughout the month of October. Last year was the first, and we just wrapped up this year. So it was a full month packed with different events, especially most of them on the weekends. Different workshops. There were some writing workshops, some writing personal essays. There were a few screenwriting workshops and writing for film. There were some art workshops. There was a really wonderful watercolor workshop with Angela Gaffney Smith over at Seaman Park. There was a poetry workshop with Will Nixon over at the Saugerties Lighthouse, and sort of using what's surrounding us as inspiration for bringing art out. We also had, this is the first year that the Woodstock Film Festival has been part of Shout Out Saugerties. So we've had a few films playing at the Orpheum in Saugerties. We've also started up a film program ourselves by a lot of local artists. So there was a film by Katie Kokonos, and a few short films by other local filmmakers as well that were all screened at the Saugerties Library. There was a big community sculpture, a Flotsam and Jetsam sculpture, which turned out to be a big dragon, and we asked the community to supply us with recyclables, recycled plastic bottles, the netting that you would get from the grocery store with onions and lemons and some of the produce. So they put together a really wonderful sculpture out of chicken wire, and every Saturday throughout October, the community came and helped build this sculpture and really bring it to life. It was just unveiled this past Sunday as part of the finale, which was the Makers and Doers Fair, which had, it was a day packed with different activities to close out the month. Also some poetry readings throughout the month, some literature events. It was a really creative time in October. And I think it's there's a couple reasons why we do this. It's to bring focus to the arts. And I don't know if people realize that it is such an artistic community over in Saugerties and the surrounding community as well. And also to provide just an appreciation for the arts, for the community itself, non-artists and artists alike. So this time it was a big success, and next year it will be even bigger.
Good.
We're trying to do things throughout the year also to keep the Shout Out Saugerties name out there. Like last April, we celebrated National Poetry Month by having a few different poetry events and also matching up different local merchants with poems in their window, and we created a poetry walk so you can go from space to space and read the poems that we curated for the different business windows. It's also a way to get people into town and to really support your local merchants.
Now, this is the Emerge Gallery. This is not your first gallery.
This is the first gallery I've owned. I've been gallery director and have managed other galleries in New Jersey. Gallery U, which the U stood for Universal. I ran their gallery in both Red Bank and Westfield, New Jersey's. The gallery itself was a fully functional community art gallery, very, very much like the model that I use now. But the reason why Gallery U was there is because it was a vocational training program for adults with traumatic brain injuries. So we would have our TBI clients come from our rehab centers to the gallery, and they would do different tasks during the day, Monday through Friday, to help keep the gallery alive. So I would work with them one-on-one. In for some of the higher functioning clients, I would have them do some internet research. For some of the lower functioning clients, we still sent out paper mailers, so a lower functioning client could participate as well by folding the flyers and stuffing them into envelopes. It would that's part of their physical therapy as well, and their vocational therapy. And it was a really it's still ongoing, but it's a really unique model. Because our clients took pride in what they did. They got paid for the work that they did there. So it provided them with a work opportunity, as well as, a lot of different learning experiences. I love the whole one-on-one with the clients. And every show that I always hung up, there was always a handful of TBI clients where I would bring out to the gallery, and we'd spend a little time on each piece, talking about the piece. I've been trying to bring out, get them to answer questions and get them to think and be creative in their responses. So that was really rewarding.
You've really had an adult life of art. We were talking earlier about you going to the Germain School of Photography in Manhattan.
Yes.
Before that, how were you involved in the arts, or was it just photography?
It was, you know, I sort of fell into the arts. The arts have always been a big part of my life, although I've never really pursued it until recently. I never went to school for art. Everything that I've learned is, you know, it's all my own doing and my own exploration. I don't have a degree in art. I don't, you know, pretend to be something that I'm not. I have a good eye. I like pulling things together. And it works. You know, I've always been a very creative person. I mean, me personally, I wish I could pick up a canvas and a paintbrush and create half of what the artists that I exhibit create. I can't do that. But my creativity lies in other ways, you know, like in hanging the show. All of my shows are pretty much all group shows. So there's like this current show that's opening on Saturday is a smaller show. So it's all smaller size art. And there's 50 different artists in there, all with different styles. So that's an art in itself, is putting it together on the wall. Because it's all different styles, all different mediums. But it's important to me that, you know, with a solo show, most likely you either like the artist's work or you don't. But with a group show, you may not like this artist's work, but you may like the one right next to it. So there's always something that you can find in a group show.
It's like a tapestry that you're creating.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And it's really interesting, the connections that the art sort of naturally make. Usually when I'm hanging a show, I'll lay it all out in front of me, and then I'll start with one piece right in the center, one strong piece in the center, and I'll build on that. The connections start making themselves clear, whether it's a connection of the color palette that the artists are using, or some kind of flow that's in one piece that carries over to the next by a completely different artist. But it's important to me that all of the pieces work well together, that you create a visual journey from the minute you walk into the gallery until the very end. So it's important to me that it's not just thrown together haphazardly, and that there's, you know, that there is an art to it. So I suppose that, you know, that's my art. And then photography and poetry as well. Those are art.
And a few short stories.
Yeah, not much. mostly poetry. I don't think I'm disciplined enough to do short stories. Just because, especially with poetry, you know, every word means something. And I think that with writing short stories, for me at least, is a little too freeing. I try to get a little more concise and to the point with poetry. To me, poetry has more of an impact than a short story does. Well, I love reading short stories and short fiction. I just wish I could write them.
Well, speaking of writing, your last show,
yes,
was called Tell a Story.
Yes.
And tell us about how that started and the end when people came up and read poems and stories.
I wanted to do something engaging as part of Shout Out Socrates. So one of the things that I really like to do is challenge artists, whether it be a theme show or something like this, where I invited, I sent out a call for art for very narrative work. The work that was received was wonderful, and it was all very narrative. And I hung them on hung it as a show and invited writers, to come in throughout the month, connect with a piece or two or some cases six. and finish telling the story that the artist started in their piece of art, whether it be through a short story, poetry, personal essay.
And you're speaking of work that's mixed media, sculpture, painting, photography.
Yes.
Across the board.
Yeah, there's some fiber art in there. A little bit of everything. With all my group shows, unless it's specific to a medium I try to get a nice selection of everything. Again, as long as it all works well together. So for this Tell Me a Story, writers were creating throughout the month, either coming into the gallery, spending a little time with the work, or a number of them viewed the work online, because all of the work in the shows are all posted online as well.
That's great.
So they created work that way. And then last weekend, for the closing, I had a reading, invited all of the poets or the writers who had written to the work to come on in and share the work. A number of artists or writers had emailed the submissions over to me. So myself and another reader, Teresa Landis Daniels, read the work for the writers that weren't there. She was very good, right?
She's
a fantastic writer. Yeah.
Yeah,
she's done that for me before, and I'm, you know, she's definitely a performer. Mm. The work that came together, I was just, you know, floored by the quality of both the art and the writings that came out of this project. If your viewers are interested, the work is all still online. Mm. So you can check out the website, and I posted all of the writings that were created as part of the show.
And what's that website?
www.emergegalleryny.com.
Where did Emerge come from?
Good question. I still wonder that myself. In one way, I felt like I was emerging. Mm. My focus is also on emerging artists, although I've exhibited a number of established artists too. Saugerties is emerging as an art scene, so I think Emerge came from a number of different places.
Hmm. Makes sense.
Yeah. It just seemed appropriate, more of like a coming out almost.
And you have monthly exhibitions that you put out a call for artists. So
I do.
We definitely recommend our listeners, or if you're artists and interested in the Emerge Gallery, go to the website, check
yes.
out what's online, and see if there are some exhibitions that you'd like submit to.
Yes, please. I post calls for art all the time. Right now I have a call for art out for red art for December. That your it doesn't have to just be red, but your eye should be drawn to the red element in the piece. Even if it's just a small dot, your eye should be immediately drawn to that.
And we were speaking also before mm-hmm. air that you're showing an artist who has been out of sort of the art world for a while, and you're bringing him back.
I am. His name is Peter Bradley. Lives here in Saugerties. And it's, you know, it's I'm really, really pleased to be bringing his work out, especially in Saugerties, because I don't know if the community is aware of the valuable resource that we have in Peter, right in their own backyard. Peter is best known for curating the first racially integrated art show in Houston in 1971. He's an abstract artist. He was originally asked to be part of the Whitney's Contemporary Black Artist in America exhibition in the 70s, or I think it was the late 60s. But he wasn't really pleased with the whole idea of being portrayed as just a black artist, African-American artist. So he went ahead and got some funding through a art collector, John DeMennel, who is over in Houston, and put together the first fully racially integrated art show in Houston in 1971 called The Deluxe, where he was part of the whole color field movement towards the end of that. So he exhibited folks like Kenneth Nolan, Jules Zelitsky, and Larry Poon side to side with their black contemporary artists. It was a hugely successful show. Peter's also he was friends with Sam Golden of Golden Paints, and Sam always gave him paints to test out, and Peter did some really creative work with Golden Paints, and there was a whole movement that was founded by what Peter did with Golden Paints, and the movement was called the New Painters. It's a small movement in New York in the 70s. Peter's been creating all this time. He was in South Africa in the 80s responding to apartheid with some of his sculptures. He's a jazz musician. He toured with Art Blakey. He was friends with Miles Davis. So he's mm-hmm. also entrenched himself into the whole jazz world. He's still creating really large pieces. His work is part of the collections in the MoMA over at the Met. The Fogg Museum at Harvard, the African American Museum in Dallas. So he's pretty pretty widely exhibited around. He's been creating all this time at his home in Saugerties. It's a 18th century stone farmhouse that he's been restoring. So, you know, I've been getting to know he and his wife for a bit, and I was just thrilled when they accepted my offer to do an exhibition for him. He's been asked before, but he wants to keep it local. He doesn't want, you know, the whole big pretentious art scene. So I'm really pleased that he chose me to do that. So right now I'm on Saturday, beginning Saturday, so through November and December, I will have one large piece of Peter's on the back wall as a preview for a larger solo show that's coming up in June.
That's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really excited about it, and I think folks will really be pleased with the work.
Well, you know, I just being introduced to you in the last few months and exploring your website and your presence on Facebook, you're a very busy person because you really put the content out there for people to see whether they can make it to the gallery or not. And the hours of the gallery, you're open from when to when?
My closed days are Tuesdays and Wednesdays, although Thursday has been turning out to by appointment only. So my full days are Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday from 11 until 6, Sundays until 5.
That's great.
But I'm always, you know, if someone wants to come in, I'm always willing to, you know, open up the gallery for them on my closed days if I'm in.
And it's a very intimate gallery.
It is.
It's basically the size of a living room.
Pretty much, yeah.
So it, to me, it's the one thing about art is we always want to encourage the wider population to invest in art.
Yes.
And it's, I would say, knowing a lot of artists and non-artists, I'm unfortunately, a lot of non-artists don't have a lot of original work on their walls, but usually artists, you go to their homes and the walls are plastered with not only their own artwork, but those of other people that they just... because I'm sure you get inspired by the work that you see on your walls.
Oh, every show, there's always, you know, always at least two or three pieces that I want to take home with me, and, you know, sometimes I do. yeah, and I mean, it's interesting that you bring that up, because one of my goals in the gallery is to make art accessible and affordable. I think that, you know, art enriches everyone's lives, whether they realize that or not. It enriches it in some way or another. And I also think that a lot of people don't realize that they could afford to purchase an original piece of art for what you would pay for a mass-produced piece at, say, Home Goods or, you know, a shop like that. So my gallery, I mean, you can come into my gallery and buy an original piece of art from $20 and up.
Yeah, that's great.
It's I think it's important, you know, and it's special to have... just to have that one piece of art that you know that you know connected with on a high level, and you're the only person that has that. I don't know. Even today, I look at the art in my own home, and just years later, like there's this one piece that that I have. It was I worked at a children's publisher out in San Francisco, and I remember that one of the pieces that was part of a book called Iguanas in the Snow. The artist was Maya Cristina Gonzalez, and it's a image that she created for the book of just children standing in the snow. But every time I saw that, every time I walked into work when that book was being produced and saw that piece of art, it just brought a smile to my face every single time. And I wound up purchasing the piece, and it's been hanging in my bedroom for the last 20 years, I guess, close to it. And it's the first thing I see when I wake up every morning, and every morning it brings a smile to my face. And I think that's really what art should do. You know, it should, people should really be able to find that connection with art. And when you do find it, I think it should make you feel something.
It's like a book in a way. I think, you know, a book you read, but it tells a story. The visual of art also tells a story.
Yes. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah. And it's probably your own story.
It's whatever you look into it. You know, it's whatever you bring into it. You know, it's like, I like abstract art because I'm always curious to hear what people think or what they see in abstract. You know, and every person's interpretation is different because you bring in your own experience to it. Which is the same with the Tell Me a Story show. You know, it was really interesting because a couple people wrote to the same piece, completely different writings. So it in that sense, it was really interesting to see you know, just how people connected in different ways to art.
And I'm glad that you, when I was over, you know, I was at the reading, looking over your shoulder and realizing you're doing this live. You did the whole experience live for people to watch, and now it's also archived so that people can watch and listen to the whole reading process.
It is, yes. It's I went live on Facebook, so it's archived on the Emerge Gallery Facebook page. Hoping to download it and put it on the website. So yeah, if you're interested and you want to see some of the work that came out of it, please go have a visit.
The you know, I was a little bit in the back, so I could hear people going, oh my, just by the powerfulness of the writer. It was moving, quite moving.
Isn't that wonderful to get a reaction like that? You know, I mean, like, I mean, my poetry is my art. That's what I, you know, that's what I consider my art. And it's always interesting to hear people's reactions at the end, because you know, with a poem, I always try to get a little zinger there at the end and close it with a you know, with a little gasp. And when you get that gasp from the audience, it's always so rewarding. Mm-hmm. You know, it's okay. I did the right thing. That was the right word.
You brought it up earlier, but I wanted to ask you about your 13 years in San Francisco. And
sure.
How did you make the journey? Why go from east to west coast?
Well, if you're familiar with the Tales of the City stories, I pulled a Marion Singleton. I was 26 at the time. I had done the photography thing, didn't really want to do it anymore. And I had gone back to school with the intentions of teaching. I find that I'm a natural teacher. And while I was in school, I went to visit San Francisco with a friend of mine. Her cousin had given her $50 tickets. Had never any desire to go, but I figured, you know, hey, $50 to go to California, yeah, I'll go. So I went, and I just fell in love with the place. It's such a, you know, beautiful, beautiful town. And I wound up moving out a month later. I mean, you hear those stories, but they happen. I just had nothing going on for me in New Jersey at the time. And I felt like I needed the challenge. I'm always challenging myself. That's one thing I got to say. Yeah, I did. And, you know, I went out to San Francisco. It was difficult in the beginning because I really didn't really know anyone. Did a lot of temp work. I got a customer service position at a publisher in San Francisco. And the person in marketing decided to take a chance on me, and you know, by the time I left 13 years later, I was director of sales and marketing at a publisher. So it was a really rewarding experience, and I'm a book lover myself. So you know, I can only sell things that I really care about and that I believe in, and books and art are two things that you know, I'm really passionate about. I know the connections there that people make between them, and you know, I'm pleased to be selling them.
And this was a publisher who was a nonprofit children's book.
That came later. Oh. This was a publisher of professional material, so I dealt with a lot of business management, psychology management, hire an adult ed. Mostly things for administrators, very dry. But I did work for a nonprofit bilingual picture publisher in San Francisco called Children's Book Press. I worked there for 9 years. I was director of sales and marketing. And that was really my first exposure to working with artists in the fine art market. We didn't use children's illustrators. The books were bilingual, one side in English, the other side mostly in Spanish. We did Spanish, some of the Asian languages. And it was important that we worked with both the writers and artists from the communities that they were representing. And most of the artists that we worked with were all fine artists. This was the first time they actually created for a children's book. So it was a really exciting and rewarding process to be part of working along with the artist and drawing sketches and then seeing it fleshed out into the actual artwork and then seeing it in the book and then getting them into the bookstores and libraries. So it was incredibly rewarding, and it was really my first experience with working with fine artists, which I really enjoyed a lot. So when the opportunity to manage and curate the shows at Gallery U came up, I jumped at it.
I want to remind our listeners, you're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM. This is the Art of the Hudson Valley. I'm your host, Chad Weckler, and we're having a great conversation with Robert Langdon, who is an artist, curator of the Emerge Gallery in Saugerties, and a varied, interesting journey he's made up, bringing us up to this very moment.
Yeah.
Is there always a first Friday in Saugerties?
Usually from the spring on, we'll do first Fridays until December, and then we'll take the winter off. Yeah.
Yeah, I find that sometimes that's a very difficult thing for some communities to be organized to do. I know Hudson's try to do first Fridays, first Saturdays, and especially when you have so many galleries, it's so very difficult often to organize something like that. But how many galleries would you say are in Saugerties?
There's two traditional galleries, myself, and then there's Jen Dragon's gallery, Cross Contemporary Art. Jen focuses on mostly mid-career artists, all very local. I think we have two different models, but I think we complement each other really well. And, you know, there's a group of us that are working to really position Saugerties as an arts destination. It's been turning into it without much help, but now, you know, now we want to move it along a little bit.
What was the sidewalk ships that were up for a while?
Oh, this yeah. Year? That's an event sponsored by the Chamber of Commerce every year. This year it was Sailing Around Saugerties, and they take submissions from mostly local artists for every year. They'll do a different theme. Last year it was sailboats. The year before it was horses. They had done lighthouses and cars before. And they'll have local artists submit designs, and they'll accept probably about 30 or so. And they're models that are positioned throughout the village on posts during the whole summer. And then they're auctioned off at the end of the year in September for with proceeds going to a local charity.
That's great. That's something like the Cats and Catskill.
Exactly, right. And then lots of towns do it. Woodstock does guitars.
Makes sense.
Yeah. And the Cats and Catskills, you know, that's perfect. That makes perfect sense. There's also a town in New Jersey, Boonton, that does the Lazy Dog Days of Summer. So they've got summer dog statues all over the place. So it's a great way to you know, draw people into your town and to give a little exposure to local artists. It's a great way to be real creative too. So if there's any artists that are listening, the opportunity is available. So
where do you go to find out about that?
You go to the Chamber website. Yeah, I think they'll probably be announcing them sometime in the beginning of the year, early spring. They'll be sending a call out.
So has it been decided what kind of blank canvas object it's going to be?
I think we're going to do sailboats again this year. I'm not too sure, though. They found that with a sail, it allows for a much wider place to create, you know, a real much wider flat surface to create something. So, and they've been pretty popular.
Good.
Yeah.
And did I see yarn or woven things?
You did.
On some of the parking meter posts?
You did, yes. We just recently, the Sheep and Wool Festival in Rhinebeck just happened about, I think it was about 2 weekends ago, which is a huge event. And many of the towns in the area, including Saugerties, gets a lot of residual. A lot of the people come and visit. And it's a big event, really huge event that people come to from all over the country, all over the world. So they've been doing an independent version of it called Indie Untangled for the last few years that they've done at a hotel in Kingston, but they outgrew it. So this year they had it at SPAF, which is like an exhibition hall in Saugerties. So the merchants got together and decided that, you know, we have all of these people coming into town. We want to show them a good time. The exhibition, I mean, there 1,000 tickets sold out within the first hour for the exhibition center. So we got together. Permission was granted from the mayor to yarn bomb all of the parking meters. We offered different specials to all of the guests in town. We got a shuttle bus that would take them from the parking lot through the village up to SPAF. We put some knitting stations around town where, if people wanted to just sit down and knit for a bit, they could.
That's great.
So it was a great event. Yeah, it was really nice. And, you know, we welcome opportunities like that where large groups of people come into town so that we can show them, you know, just how wonderful Saugerties is.
So, being that you're also on the Chamber of Commerce, you're, I would imagine, you're constantly trying to come up with ways to get more visitors to come to Saugerties.
That's been happening, yes. Yeah. Yeah, like I said, you know, we've been seeing Saugerties change around us without really us doing much. But we, you know, we want to accommodate these people and be part of that change.
When you started the Emerge Gallery, has the exhibitions changed or evolved? Or is basically you hit it right out of the box and you've continuously had the same kind of exhibitions?
Well, they're pretty much all group shows. I've done one solo show a year. Last year I did Lowell Barr, a wonderful artist in Saugerties, and I exhibit her work in many of our shows. She's a favorite of mine and also of the community. But I do mostly group shows. There are a couple shows that have turned out to be annual shows, like this petite show that's opening on Saturday. It's all smaller work, 12 by 12 and under. This is the time of year that most people do the small shows because it is gift-giving time. The work is very affordable. Yeah, so that's usually every November. And then December, I do a red show, as I mentioned. The calls are still out for that. That's been a very popular show as well. And then the other show that I do in April to celebrate National Poetry Month is a ecrasy show, or an art and word show. So it's similar to the Tell Me a Story, but it's a little more formalized. I'll invite artists to participate and poets to participate. The artists are asked to submit existing artwork that go to the poets. Poets are asked to connect with a piece or two and then create a new piece of a new poem inspired by that piece of art. Those same poets are asked to submit existing poetry that go to the artist, and the artists are asked to connect with a poem or two and then create a new piece of art inspired by that poem. It's been done the other way for, you know, centuries. It's usually writing to art, but it's not very often that art is created in response to the writing. With the exhibit, they'll be exhibited side by side. The poem right next to the piece of art, and, you know, you need to figure out which came first, the poem or the art.
Neat. Mm-hmm. And you brought with us, to us, a book of your poetry.
I brought a few things.
I want you to partake in some
sure I mean, poetry. If you'll indulge me, that would be great.
Absolutely.
I do have a book out called The Candied Road Ahead. It's poems and stories, although it's mostly poems. Hmm. There are some one-way phone conversation dialogues that I guess can be considered fiction, but it's basically listening to my mom talk on the phone.
Hmm, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's and the pieces are interesting. If you don't mind, I would like to read a poem that I wrote for one of the pieces that was in the Tell Me a Story show.
Sure.
It was a piece by Al DeSetta called Visiting Day. It was a large piece that I've seen Al's work before, and I've been waiting for an opportunity to exhibit his work. So this seemed like the perfect opportunity. His work is very narrative. Sort of reminds me of like a Deanne Arbus photograph, but as a painting, it's got that aesthetic.
Yes.
So I was immediately drawn to it, and I was looking at it all month, and the poem was developing in my head all month, lines here and there that I would jot down. But I literally finished it the morning of the reading. Finally got it out there and sat down and wrote it. So, but again, it's been brewing in my head for a while. So this is it's called Visiting Day, and my work is all very personal. This is my therapy. So, okay. So Visiting Day. I never liked Visiting Day. Mom would take me with her to the home. It was always cold and smelled of antiseptic. He never remembered me. The one that his wife fought hard to live to see born, and once I was, she would let go. He would stare at me, confused by how familiar I looked, then back to Mom with a blank face while he listened to her updates about people who had long fled his mind. He would look at me again, hard, trying to figure out the connection, the tips of his shock of white hair reaching for answers. Sometimes he would grab them, and his eyes would get excited, but he would just as quickly lose his grasp and slip back to forgetting. "Why do you still go to see him?" I asked Mom on our way home. "Because he's my father," she said, wiping her tears, "and I want him to know that I'm visiting and that he's not alone." Years later, Mother would go through this again with her brother, holding his hand, talking to fill the void, recounting stories from childhood in the hopes that one would trigger a memory and the brother who she loved would pop up for a mere second to say that everything was okay. But sometimes I question if everything is okay. These days I walk into a room and immediately forget why I'm there. I talk to people I know that I know, but I can't figure out how I know them. Or a conversation drops out of my mind minutes after it's been had. I'm hoping these are signs of getting old, that they're normal. But if not, then I hope I don't forget the music. No, not the music. Because I'll need something to focus on when the strangers come on visiting day.
That is very befitting of the artwork, too, in my opinion.
It is, right? And it's... Yeah.
Takes a single image... And takes you, you know, and your work takes it on a story line.
Yes, yeah, and that's exactly what I wanted the show to be like, you know. And it's an image of a man and a woman just smiling for a photograph.
Mm.
But there's something a little off about it, and there's something a little odd. You don't necessarily know what. And it's interesting because there was another poet, Gwyneth Green, who wrote a piece to this about the woman in the piece being a mathematician. So it's really interesting to see her interpretation of it. I mean, I go for the whole personal end of it, and you know, most of my poetry is, like I said, it's all therapeutic, me getting issues out, working things out.
Yeah. Your therapy.
My therapy. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
So, how about something from your book?
Sure. Let's see.
When was this published?
This was published in 2013, and it's a collection of probably about 20 so years of work. All right, let me do this one. This is... I'll do this. It's called Mauled. And let me just prep. I know it's sometimes I don't like when people tell stories before, but let me just preface this with I wrote this when I had moved back to New Jersey from San Francisco after all that time. And where I grew up is about 15 minutes outside the Lincoln Tunnel, and it's a very suburban area in New Jersey that has, within the last 20 years, exploded, especially since 9/11 with all new development. And where I grew up, there was a mountain up the street from me that has since been torn down, and there's condos all over the place. And when I would go to visit, there literally would be deer walking down the suburban streets where, growing up, I would need to go 45 minutes away to see a deer. And now they're being displaced, and they're popping up all over the place, especially on the side of the roads. So this was my response to that. It's called Mauled, M-A-L-L-E-D. Little play on words. Okay, Mauled. The Disney dream is a lie. Bambi has been rewritten. No longer is it the danger of flames and firearms. It's crossing a four-lane highway and being trapped against a median, a warm blood flower streaked by the wipers of a Humvee. The roads are littered with animal parts, scattered like pummeled puzzle pieces. Turkey vultures claim their day and overkill of death, their feathers defying the cars zipping by. Displaced crows pepper the sky above Walmart, soaring around the naked tree branches or feeding off discarded fast food French fries. Their guttural caws, thick with resignation, trumpet the air. Woodland creatures claim a piece of their space that has been replaced with snow-speck cement, whitewashed fences, and air-pumped Christmas decorations big as the SUV sentries standing guard. We have raped the land, stolen the forest, and rebuilt it with doors and bay windows. We have given the mountains a mastectomy. Condos and spoiled children sprout out like mushrooms, fungus much too wild, too rich, and much too toxic to the touch. That was 2006.
No? Yeah. Don't put that book away.
Okay. You want more?
Oh yeah. I love the stories. Very visual.
Yeah. They are very visual. They're there's mostly all narrative works. It's important that again with poetry is another thing that is not accessible to a lot of people. And it wasn't accessible to me when I was in school. And then someone introduced me to the poet Anne Sexton. Anne Sexton's from the 60s. She was part of that whole Robert Lowell, Sylvia Plath confessional group in the 60s and 70s. And her therapist suggested that she use poetry as a way to as a way of therapy. So she started writing that way. And she created some really, really wonderful work, some heartbreaking work. Her language was a bit confrontational, and she would combine different words that didn't necessarily make sense in the real world, but it made perfect sense in her poetry. One of the favorite things she ever did was come out with a book called Transformations. And it was basically her retelling of the traditional Grimm fairy tales. I'm a big fan of Grimm fairy tales, the real ones, not the watered down ones.
The gory ones.
Yes, yeah. And she put her own spin on them. And I remember one of the lines in her version of Snow White was, "The seven dwarfs, those tiny czars, waddled like hot dogs." I don't know. But just the visual of that I thought was wonderful. And just so, out there, the language. So, so she had introduced me to the whole idea that poetry can be accessible. It's not, and it can be exciting. I love Robert Frost. The road less taken, is that what it's called,
or less traveled?
Less traveled.
Yeah.
you go to this road, go to that road. It wasn't much of a challenge for me. It wasn't as exciting for me as a lot of other people. The same thing with photography with Ansel Adams. I think is an incredible photographer, but it doesn't move me. I think it's pretty, but someone like Dion Arbus, those characters.
Yeah, just, I agree.
Yeah. And again, those are snapshots, just like my poetry is a bit of a snapshot in my life. So a lot of my poetry is dealing with issues, growing up gay, growing up Catholic, growing up in the suburbs. So this is a little one called Magic. I need to tell you a little the story about this, too. There was a book that I had read called Talking to Girls About Duran Duran by Rob Sheffield. And he took classic new wave songs, that was the title, and then wrote a story about where that song takes him in his life. And most of them had to do with dealing with girls. Love that idea because I'm a big music fan, and a song can send me back 20 years. I could hear it today and immediately be transported back into a time during high school years. So I like that how music can do that. And I had started doing a collection of poems where it's the title of a song and then where that took me. So that's what this is from. It's called Magic, Olivia Newton-John. 13 years old with hormones just learning how to rage through the misguided efforts of friends, antiquated encyclopedias, and the church. This was the year of my obsession with Brooke Shields. She wooed me into a frenzy that carried me from store to store in search of magazine photos that I could add to the shrine covering my bedroom walls. I would stare at her many personas, the pouty child, the starlet on the town, the seductive tween, before drifting off to sleep in the hopes that this pretty baby would enter my dreams and turn everything around. I believe that with her damage-free hair and commitment to purity, she would make the ideal wife. She was someone that my mother would approve of, and a reason for Dad to throw me a way-to-go glance. Plus, she personally knew Bob Hope and the Muppets. I begged my parents to take me to see the Blue Lagoon when it was released, but I was continually met with, "That's not for you." My mother's sister eventually convinced them, and off we went to the movies, my mother, my cool aunt, and myself. My focus fixed on the strands of long hair that discreetly covered Brooke's nakedness, hoping they would be swept away. Years later, I discovered that the hair was glued to pasties, and that no matter how hard the tropical winds blew, breasts would not be revealed. Their flirtation grew stronger, and Brooke's nakedness remained discreet. But the boy exposed more. At the same time, my discomfort built, yet so did my intrigue. I knew that deep, deep down, I was hoping to see what his loincloth covered. I glanced at Mom through the corner of my eye, and I could sense her distress with the naturalism of nudity. I found myself sinking deeper into the plush of the theater seat, hoping she wouldn't discover my secret, and frantically praying and bargaining for God to make things different.
Great. Yeah, during this conversation, I've been thinking about titles.
Yes.
Titles of poems, titles of books, titles of artwork.
Mm-hmm.
For me as an artist, I always find it frustrating to come up with a name to best describe something. And started thinking during this conversation, it would be interesting to, if you had an exhibition, just number each image and have people who come in on a card say, you know, number 7, what do you think that title should be? And you make a you know, what you think that is called and just put it in the box, and then later at the end of the show you take out all the cards and separate them, you know. All right, number 7, we've got 4 suggestions, and just to see what people would come up. It's like, rather than a story, it's going to be a couple words to describe the artwork.
Yeah. I think that's fantastic. That's a great idea. I'm always looking for ways to challenge and really to bring people into the arts. I love that idea. I don't mind.
No. I personally, you know, when I make a submission, and sometimes the title changes over time for me.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, I look at it differently, and I have another name for it, which makes it difficult to go into the archive and find the appropriate right. image
right.
to see where it is.
Yeah.
But it's for me as an artist, it's challenging. For instance, I will be submitting to your Red Show.
Oh, great. Good.
So I go back, and I'm starting to get maybe a personal, subjective viewpoint of you as a curator, mm-hmm. because every gallery, the owner is a curator, and they always have a different, they're always different.
Sure.
Sometimes you think, oh, they're going to love this, and then they don't pick anything, and sometimes, oh, they picked that one? Gee, that was one I wasn't going to submit because I didn't think it was that good. So it's always exciting, you know, to submit whether you get accepted as an artist or not. Mm-hmm. You know, it's incumbent of the artist to give it a try.
Absolutely.
And not be afraid.
Oh, yeah. I think it's important that you put yourself out there. You know, I mean, one of myself included, one of my, you know, my least favorite things is rejection.
Mm.
You know, and gosh, rejection has stopped me from doing so many things, or the fear of rejection. But as an artist, you know, I mean, artists are very sensitive, and sometimes it takes a lot to submit something. But I definitely encourage artists to submit work. Not just to me, but to anywhere,
yes.
and continue to, because from the point of view as a curator, there are times when I get work that is like Al's work, that's wonderful, but it just doesn't fit in with the show that I'm, you know, curating at the moment.
Yeah.
And I try to convey that to the artists when I send them, you know, a letter. You know, and I also try not to, I don't want them to take it personally, because there are other opportunities. And in responding to your question about why I'm surprised they took that one, a lot of times that, for me at least, that has to do with what else is in the show
yes.
and what fits with the show. If I were to just pick out a collection of someone's work that didn't necessarily connect with anything else, then, you know, I'd just be picking out the best pieces. So yeah, I mean, there's definitely a fear of it, but I really encourage people not to be afraid. You know, don't mm-hmm. take things personally. Art is meant to be out there.
Yes.
Yeah. As an artist, you know, it's great that you're creating, but it's, you know, the next step is to get it out there and share it with the world.
And so, to remind our listeners, the next exhibition that opens up this weekend,
mm-hmm.
Please, Robert, tell us about it.
It is Petite. And it is a group show of smaller work. It opens this Saturday from 5 to 8. Everyone's welcome. I also do a preview during First Fridays. So there will be a preview this Friday. Also wanted to mention I'm curating a show for Wynn Morrison Realty. Realty that is two doors over from me. So that opens tomorrow also. And it's a landscape and skyscape show. There's about 6 different artists in that show.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope Saugerties, which I assume it is, a lot of the establishments welcome artwork on their walls.
Oh, yeah. And we've been working closely with a lot of the businesses. Like, as part of Shout Out Saugerties, one of the events was the Village is a Gallery.
Mm-hmm.
And we paired up artists with different businesses for the month. So they had work in their windows. And it was a little bit of a walk for that, so you can see what kind of creativity is in the community. I also wanted to mention real quick, tonight, if you're in Kingston, if you want to hear more from curators, there is a, I'm going to be part of a curators panel. It's myself, the curator from the Ann Gallery, Ann Street Gallery, and WAM, the Woodstock Art Museum. It's in Kingston at the Beverly. It starts at 6. It's part of the Arts Action Meetup, which is sponsored by Arts Mid-Hudson, which is a wonderful organization. It's a member organization that supports the arts. If you're not familiar with them, I definitely encourage you to check them out. It's Arts Mid-Hudson, and they service 3 of the counties in the area, Ulster, Greene, and Columbia County. By providing funding opportunities, different exhibition opportunities, different programming. It's a wonderful organization.
What is the Beverly?
The Beverly is a bar in Kingston. It's the event starts at 6:30. There'll be about a half hour of schmoozing, and then followed by the panel, and then a little bit of schmoozing after.
And how would someone find that online? Is it available?
The Beverly, yeah. You can go to artsmidhudson.org. They should have it listed on there. And then also there's a Facebook page, too, for the Kingston Art Meetup.
Cool. Well, you know, Robert, the hour is at an end.
Really? And I was concerned we wouldn't be able to fill it.
Oh, no, you did very, very, very well. So remind our listeners, you've been listening to Robert Langdon, who's the curator of the Emerge Gallery in Saugerties, New York. And this is WGXC 90.7 FM. Thank you, Robert, for being on the program.
Thank you, Chad. It's been my pleasure. It's been
and
a thrill.
I'm on every...